30 years of advice for your house, home, castle, or cabin.
Y'all have things you want to get done.
It's Rosie on the House.
Welcome to the 9 o'clock hour here at Rosie on the House. It is the open line hour where we talk about anything and everything you, the Arizona homeowner, want to talk about your house, home, castle, or cabin. Maybe you're trying to get a project done around the house and you need a second opinion or a little help taking it to the next step, or you've got roof work you've got from the recent rains that you need done, you have a couple estimates and you want to talk through and compare them. We won't make the decision for you, but we'll make comparisons and tell you what you're looking for in each one of those. Whatever it is about your house, home, castle, or cabin, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. You can text to 411-923, or if you need visual aid, you can email us a picture to info@rosieonthehouse.com. info@rosie, R-O-S-I-E, onthehouse.com. Our featured event this week is the Empire Ranch Cowboy Festival. This is one of the just sacrifices we have to make of being every Arizona homeowner's best friend. Instead of being at the Cowboy Festival, we've got to be here in the studio. But that's okay. We're willing to make that. But if you want to see an Old West experience on the Empire Ranch that was a lot of the movie Tombstone with Kurt Russell and Doc Holliday, this is where a lot of that was filmed. It's not too far from Tombstone, but this is the open range where a lot of that ranch world was. It'd be a great experience for the entire family. It is a family event. Coming up in the third segment, our weekly to-do will have to do with maintaining your credit, as November is finance month for Rosie on the House. We do a lot of projects around the house, but having the finances to own, maintain, and operate a home, pretty important part of home ownership. So it's finance month here. We just wrapped up painting month last month, and we'll go into, of course, our gift ideas in November as it relates to the manufacturers here in America that contributed to our 30th anniversary toolkit. We'll spend time talking with each one of those on how the products are manufactured here locally and what kind of jobs that supports. But we also have a returning guest from last week. You made your debut here at Rosie on the House as one of our paint app previewers, Miss Jen Gura. And you were with us on this tour that we took a couple weeks ago at Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant. Jill Hanks was the media coordinator, and somehow we got tied into it. You just came to me and said, Rosie asked you to fill out all this paperwork. I need a home address, social security, driver's license number. I'm like, what is this for? And she's like, it's for the tour nuclear power plant Rosie got us on. And it was a media tour. There was a handful of other media people. And I think very smartly, it was part of their PR campaign to educate media about how the plant works so that their hopes is as Proposition 127 comes to, you know, comes close to poll voting, that, you know, we educate our listeners about the how it works and everything. But I'm not really taking that angle. Just the overall impression of the plant is all I want to talk about today. What were you expecting when you pulled up?
I wasn't really sure what to expect. I mean, you know, you're driving down the 10 on your way to California and you see some, you know, billowing clouds out in the distance, and you know it's Palo Verde, but when you drive up to it, it's just so much bigger than a picture could do it justice.
And the where it's physically located, it's got these small little terrains that really camouflage it. You can see it from 10, and like you said, you see the smoke rising, but as you're driving, you're thinking, where is this? It's getting close. And you just come around this little curve, and there's just this small little hill, and then all of a sudden, it's right there. And like you said, absolutely massive.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you see the huge reactor domes, you see the billowing clouds of steam. You know, you could tell right away that one of the reactors was shut down because one of the three was not billowing clouds of steam that morning. And so I knew that's where we were headed.
And one of the interesting things is that isn't steam.
Oh.
When they sat us down in the conference room and gave us a preview before we started touring the plant, they said, that's not steam you're seeing, because you could run your hand over it. Steam is what they use to pipe into the turbine to start spinning the wheel and generating electricity. That's just the effect of the chilling towers where they're cooling all the water that they use to steam.
Yep.
So it's actually water cooling water, but they said it's not steam. I missed
water
what
vapor,
other term.
I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. I mean, oh man, there was so much info thrown at me that day. I knew halfway through the tour, I was thinking to myself, there's no way I'm going to remember as much as I want to from this. I wish I could have recorded the whole thing.
What were key takeaway points, though? And there is no way. It would take months of repeat tours to really get a complete grasp on it. What were your top takeaways, though, walking away from there?
It seemed like a flawless operation. There's so much going on there. I mean, there's thousands of employees, yet there was nobody just standing around. Everybody was moving with purpose. Everything had a place. Everything was in it. It was a very thorough operation. We learned so much, you know, just about the plant itself, like the fact that it's actually owned by six different power companies across four different states.
That was very interesting. I had no idea. One of which included SRP. You never hear SRP tied to the nuclear power plant, but they are. And one reason I think that it's in their interest to keep it running is nuclear power plant doesn't fuel itself.
Right.
It needs utilities to turn on all the machines to generate the nuclear reaction to start all of this happening. So it buys electricity to run its business just like every other business or homeowner. They buy electricity to manage their life. Palo Verde, it has to come back from hydro, coal, or gas. Some combustion that generates, you know, the steam that heats the water that spins the turbine. They're just doing it with nuclear. But they have to buy that energy because they're doing it with electricity to start making this nuclear reaction happen.
Right, yeah.
So Palo Verde's just dependent on the grid as every other business and home out there.
Right, they've got to flick the light switch on every day too.
What percent of the energy would you think is nuclear? We've got nuclear, coal, gas, the big three. What part, piece of the pie does nuclear pick?
When walking in there, I thought it was going to be quite a bit. I just, off the top of my head, I thought maybe 40%, but actually we learned it's really 20%. As of the study in 2017, it was 20% of the net utility generation, whereas the rest was made up of, you know, things like natural gas and coal and hydro and wind. And natural gas coming up second with 32%, I was definitely not something I expected.
I think the reason we take that for granted is in Arizona, it's the biggest nuclear power plant in the country. We're so close to it. We just assume that that's the rest of the way the country is if we've never lived anywhere else. But you go back to other parts of the country in the Appalachians where they're mining the coal, or up in Wyoming or where natural gas is being produced, that's the predominant source, or where there's more water and there's more hydro. Out here, it powers 4 million homes. This is the majority of the population.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the interesting thing about that as well is, you know, we're in the middle of the desert. So, you know, how do you cool that big thing? We're actually the Palo Verde is the only nuclear power plant that isn't on a large body of water. We're in the middle of the desert. That's a lot of water they need.
So where does that come from? Well pumps? Are they on the CAP?
Yeah, so the water, they still need that cooling, and the facility actually evaporates water from treated sewage and nearby, from the nearby municipalities.
It's all Phoenix waste water that is pumped 22 miles to the power plant. It's treated.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's put in these big reservoir ponds that will last over 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if for whatever reason there was a break in the pipeline from the waste treatment to Palo Verde, they've got enough water for 3 weeks where they could be trucking in, shipping in. You know, the amount of redundant backups is really, I'm jumping ahead, but the backup to the backup to the backup to the backup mm-hmm. was phenomenal. From those ponds that they're storing these billions of gallons with, you know, they then bring it in. They reuse the water 15 times before it goes to their evaporation ponds on the south side of the plant. I can't reuse water twice in my house. They were using it 15 times. When you talk about efficiency, that's efficiency.
Yeah, they're definitely they're making the most out of it. Like, you know, it's wastewater, so it's fantastic. You know, it's not like they're using fresh water or using water that could be used for other resources. It's, you know, it's all water nobody wanted in the end anyway.
Now, how many people could say they've been in the belly of the beast?
Not many.
We got to go into the belly of the beast. So there's three individual generation stations at Palo Verde. And you can look on Google Maps and see this. And each one of the three is independent of its of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And once every 18 months, they shut one down for about a month. And it's about this time, spring, fall, where the demand isn't what they need for the summertime. And they refuel it with the uranium that generates the nuclear reaction. So we got to go in while they were doing the annual maintenance and refueling their pods. And they put us in this little office building, and they're putting all these this different gear on us. We've got a bodysuit we have to put on. We have rubber we have to put around our feet. We've got rubber we put around our hands. We've got these head bonnet bandanas we've got to put on. And they left our face completely exposed. I don't know about you, but right there, I was feeling very Harry Dunned.
Right?
She grabbed me down the lobby and explained what was up. And then they slapped this bulletproof vest on me and gave me a gun.
But what if he shot you in the face?
What if he shot me in the face?
That's a risk we were willing to take.
So we've got all this protection and our face is open. Then they're like, you can't scratch your nose if you itch with your hand. You can't rub the side of your shirt. You can't touch your face anywhere. But yet they let you walk in there with a camera and put the camera up to your face snapping pictures. I just thought, is this all just for show?
Right. The amount, they actually said that the amount of radiation you get if we were walking in there like we were, you'd get more if you were flying internationally, or you'd get more exposure to radiation if you were, you know, up in Flagstaff. And, I mean, yeah, gloves on my hands, and I had gloves to put on my gloves. It was ridiculous.
And that's exactly why it really was just kind of for show, because the minimal amount of radiation compared to the rest of the radiation we get in our daily life, a fraction.
Exactly.
All right, we've got a couple more takeaways from our tour at Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant, and your calls right after this.